It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 1001 Radio Days Old Time Radio Hour. Great entertainment from the days when radio ruled the airwaves. In the days before television, radio was king. Families would gather around the living room radio set for their favorite shows and entertainment, and the choices were plentiful. There were dramas, detective shows, westerns, variety shows, suspense, comedy shows, and news, music, game shows, and fillers. And many of these shows and talents made the transition to television when that became popular in the early 50s. But from the 1920s through the mid-50s, radio ruled the airwaves and gave us a history of fantastic entertainment. And we're going to bring you our hand-picked favorites, usually featuring two half-hour episodes from the same show in our one-hour show, to give you a real sense of what each of the old radio shows was all about. We're featuring two episodes today from one of radio's most popular shows, Dragnet, which gave us 134 episodes between 1949 and 1957 on radio. The shows were based on actual case files from the Los Angeles Police Department, and, as the announcer line famously tells us, the names were changed to protect the innocent. The show was written and produced by Jack Webb, who also played the part of Joe Friday, the narrator and lead detective in the shows. Webb was a stickler for realism. He rode with Los Angeles police to get familiar with how they worked and the difficulties they faced. He also attended a number of police training academies to become familiar with terms and procedure. Dragnet became historically important for pointing out the drudgery involved in police work, as well as bringing police terms like MO, or modus operandi, meaning method of operation, and APB, or all points bulletin, to the public consciousness. The show used five sound effects experts, and as an example of how real the show tried to be, when you hear the phone ringing on Joe Friday's desk, that's the same phone that LA police were using at headquarters. Episode 1 is titled The Red Light Bandit and covers the actual story of a killer who was disguised as a cop. And Episode 2 is titled City Hall Bombing, and it tells the true story of a man with a dynamite bomb who threatened to blow up City Hall if his brother wasn't released from prison immediately. The detectives were given 30 minutes to figure out a way to stop him. And so, lights out, everybody. Quiet on the set. It's time for Radio Days, Old Time Radio Hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. A ruthless fiend roams the streets of your city, masquerading as a police officer. For months, helpless citizens have been robbed, beaten senseless, and kidnapped. The criminal is a twisted genius, vicious, cunning. Your job is to get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. Next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files, from beginning to end, from crime to punishment. Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, June 4th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from communications, and it was 11:13 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery detail.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hi, Ben. Did you get that message to call home?
Yeah, bad news.
What's the matter?
That doggone kid of mine, Chicken Pox.
Oh, again?
Last year it was the mumps. Year before that, the measles. Every time I get set for a vacation, he decides to catch something.
Well, forget it, Ben. Think what a comfort he's going to be in your old age.
Go ahead, laugh. You'll find out.
Yeah.
How are you, Friday, Romero?
Fine. What can we do for you?
You don't look like you remember me.
Oh, no, wait a minute. The name's Savage, isn't it? George?
Johnny, Sergeant. Johnny Savage. Remember now?
Oh, sure. Those liquor store robberies out in the Wilshire District. About 6-7 years ago, wasn't it?
10 years, Romero. You ought to remember that. You were at the trial.
We testify in court every week. 10 years is a long time.
It's longer in the state pen. It's a lot longer.
Now, you cried a little at that trial, didn't you, Savage? You said we beat that confession out of you.
Yeah, that's why I figured I'd drop in for a little visit. Kind of apologize to you fellas. You gave me a square deal. I guess I kind of lost my head. I figured I'd apologize.
Oh, that's all right, Savage. When'd you get out?
A couple of weeks ago. I did it the hard way. Served 10 flat. I don't own my day.
You find a job yet?
Yeah, Friday. I'm working nights.
What kind of a job?
Laborer in a warehouse, south end of town.
Good. You decided to level?
10 years in prison's a long time. You learn a lot of things. Nights are long, you think a lot. You get things straightened out.
I hope you mean that.
Sure I mean it, Friday. I've got everything straightened out. I know who my friends are, and I know who to watch out for.
You sound like maybe you're on the right track.
I got it figured, Romero. Like you two fellas. You caught me red-handed, and you sent me up for 10 years.
Well, you did all right, Savage. 5 armed robberies. You got off pretty easy.
You got a break, Savage. Make the best of it.
Sure, I'm not kicking. 10 years, a real break.
That's right.
Well, just dropped in for a little visit. Maybe I'll see you fellas sometime.
All right, Savage. Keep your nose clean?
Sure. No hard feelings.
No.
You just took 10 years of my life, that's all.
There's no such thing as a man going through prison without changing. And Ben and I have seen him switch in both directions. Some men learn their lesson after they land behind bars, and when they're released, they turn into good citizens. Johnny Savage was sour. We made a mental note to check him out later on, and then we went down to the record bureau and pulled his coming out mug. That's about all we had time for, because about an hour later, we started to get busy.
Hot shot, Joe. Grab it.
On the corner of Selma and Naples, the drugstore, 211 and probable attack. On the corner of Selma and Naples, 211 and...
What you got, Joe?
Selma and Naples, 211 and attack. Come on.
Here we are, Joe. Over there on the four corners.
Yeah.
All right.
Come on. We got the story from the victim, the store owner, Mr. Thomas. For the most part, it was the usual rundown of an early morning holdup. There was only one exception.
Oh, I've had young hoodlums try to hold me up before, but there was nothing like this one.
How you mean, Mr. Thomas?
Well, he came in here just before closing, and ordinarily I'd have kept an eye out because that's the time to look for him. But this fella came to the door and said he was a policeman, so I let him in. He looked like a cop. Barged right up to me and the wife behind the counter and pointed a gun. And she screamed, and he hit her in the face with the butt of the gun. Sergeant, it was horrible.
That's the way it started, and that's the way it kept going. Because most of the victims and most people don't realize that as a citizen, they have the right to check on police officers' identification when in doubt. After we got the story from Mr. Thomas and checked the store in the neighborhood, Ben and I headed back for the office.
Attention, all units. At the end of North Baxter Road near Hillcrest, victim of 211 and slugging. Car 7172, take the call. Code 3. Attention, all units.
That's 4 blocks away from the last one. Let's roll on it, huh, Ben?
Right, I'll hit the siren. You get the light.
By the time Ben and I got up to the end of North Baxter, the men from Car 71 were already there. The victim was telling his story. His face looked like it had been through a meat grinder.
Yeah, we're just shifting the car into second to make the hill when I hear this siren behind me, and I see this red light flashing in the side view mirror. Well, naturally, I pulled over to the curb, and I was just reaching for my driver's license when the cop runs up, yanks me out of the car, and starts clubbing me in the face with the butt of his gun.
Did you get a look at him? Think you can describe him?
No, I'm afraid not. He swung me around and kept me staring into that red light on his car all the time he was beating me. After a while, everything just went black. When I woke up, my wallet was gone, all my money's...
45 minutes later, Ben and I were interviewing the third victim, a young housewife out in the Wilshire District. Same trademark.
tried to tell him, Rachel. I tried to tell him I didn't have any money, but he wouldn't listen. He kept holding me by the throat, beating me with his fist like he enjoyed it. Beating me.
Yeah, all right, Mrs. Jameson. Could you tell us how he got in the house?
He came in the front door and rang the bell. I opened the door, but I left the burglar chain on. He said he was a policeman. So when he demanded I open the door all the way, I did. Then he grabbed me.
And you can't describe the man for us, Mrs. Jameson?
He was tall. And he had dark hair and big hands. It was like a nightmare. A horrible nightmare.
Tall, dark hair, big hands. Your guess the same as mine, Joe?
Maybe. Let's wait and see. Come on, let's check with the boss.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. He's waiting for you. In there.
Come on, Ben.
Chief of Detective's Office. Hannon.
Sit down.
Yeah, Skipper.
All right, you two, let's have it.
The guy with the red light?
Yes, the guy with the red light posing as a policeman. Why hasn't he been picked up?
You know as much about it as we do, Ed. We got our first call around midnight. He knocked over a drugstore out on Selma. He hasn't stopped working since.
Didn't you get any definite lead on him? No description, no license number?
Nothing. He's tall, big hands, dark hair, that's all.
Fine. Either of you got any ideas?
Could be anybody, Skipper, with that description.
You're sure it wasn't anybody on the force?
We sent all the victims down to personnel. Lowry showed him the mug book of all police officers. Wasn't one of our men.
Works fast. Drugstore, motorist, a pedestrian, a housewife out in the Wilshire district. Went right in the house after her. Four of them, right in a row.
Five.
Huh?
There's a 20-year-old kid in the next room. Came in just before you got here. A couple of hours ago, he was sitting in a car with this girl up in Mulholland Drive. This red light bandit comes along, slugs him, and kidnaps the girl.
Kidnapped? She still missed?
Not a trace.
When did this happen?
A couple of hours ago. They brought the kid over from Georgia Street Hospital. We can talk to him now. He's had a bad time. Right in here.
Okay.
Pete, we're going to have to ask you a few more questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It feels a little better now.
This is Sergeant Friday and Sergeant Romero.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Can you tell us what time the trouble started?
Oh, about 10:30. Sally and I were sitting in the car talking about where we were going on our honeymoon. We're going to be married next month. And then this car pulls up behind us and starts flashing a red spotlight on us, and a guy runs over and pulls open the door. He said he was a cop.
Did you get a good look at his car, Pete?
I think it was a black sedan.
Did you get a look at the man, Pete?
No, I didn't. It was pretty dark, and he kept me staring into that red spotlight. It all happened so fast. Then he started slugging me, and I went down.
What happened then?
Well, the next thing I knew, Sally was screaming. He had one hand on her throat, and he had her backed up against the side of the car. He was beating her with the other hand. Some kind of a short billy club. I got up, and I started for him, and he slugged me again. When I came to, Sally was gone.
Anybody check the area up there, Ed?
Yeah, Davis and Griffin. Didn't find a thing.
Oh, Sergeant, you gotta find her. You got to. I wouldn't know what to tell her folks. I wouldn't know what to say.
That's all right, Pete. We'll find her. You take it easy.
Got a hot shot, Ed, up in Summit Road near Westmore. A woman, unconscious. Ambulance follow-up. Possible dead body.
All right, Hannon. Look after Pete here. Friday, Romero, let's go. Up ahead, Romero, to the right.
Okay, Skip.
Yeah, there's the ambulance and the cruiser car.
You're a lonely-looking spot.
All right, come on.
Hiya, Doc. What'd you find?
Hiya, fellas. Right over here. Just gonna take her in.
Where'd you find her?
Over there, by the side of the road. Somebody driving by saw her. They called us.
Any identification?
This bracelet on her wrist.
To my dearest Sally, from Pete. December 25th, 1947.
That's a girl, all right. What are the chances, Doc?
I wouldn't bet on them. Pretty bad shape. Well, have you seen enough?
Yeah. Friday, Romero, call the crime lab and check the area for footprints and tire tracks. I'll ride back in the ambulance with the girl. If she regains consciousness, I want to talk to her. All right?
Okay, Ed.
I'll meet you in the office by 8:30. We're working straight through till we get this guy.
See you at the office, Giver.
On the time you got, Ben?
3:57. Long night.
Hey, that car up there ahead. Let's take a look at it, huh?
Black sedan. Hey, look, he's flashing a red spot on that convertible.
Come on.
He sees us, Joe. He's pulling away.
Get that gas pedal down to the floor.
Go already there. He's turning off right.
Hit the siren. I'll get the light. We're gaining a little, Ben. Next corner to the left.
Joe, where'd he go?
The fancy driver. Try the alley up ahead to the left.
Yeah. Must have turned up that cross street.
Get through the alley and double back on him.
Right.
There he is, Ben. Look out.
Watch it, Joe. Watch it. He's going to ram us.
We got hit just in front of the rear bumper. Our car was forced into the curbing and it turned over. He was real lucky. He kept right on going. But this time, Ben and I were sharing the luck. All we got out of it was a couple of nasty cracks in the head and a few bruises, but it was enough to keep us in a hospital under observation for a day. By this time, Ed Backstrand was fuming. So were the newspapers. During the day we spent in the hospital, a red light bandit went on a real blitz. He pulled 6 more jobs, 1 liquor store, 2 residential holdups, and 3 car robberies. 5 of the 6 victims were slugged and beaten. Davis and Griffin had taken over for Ben and me, and by the time we got back on the job, they'd built up a lead for us.
We've been working with Wilkerson up in auto theft, Joe. He's used 4 stolen cars already. We got the makes and numbers on each one of them.
How about the dark sedan he was driving when he rammed us?
The boys picked it up this morning out on Sepulveda. We're checking it for prints now.
Well, that's fine, Dave. You got any description on the guy yet?
No luck there, Joe. He works too fast.
Nothing at all?
The same as you had. Tall, black hair, big hands. Loves to use them.
Friday, Romero, got a minute?
Okay, Skipper. Check you later, honey.
Sure thing, boys. Sit down. How do you feel?
Pretty fair, Ed.
Little stiff here and there.
All right, did Davis fill you in?
Up to date.
Okay, I just called the doctor who's handling Sally Wilder, Pete's girlfriend. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
She's been in pretty bad shape since we found her up there on Summit Road. This morning she took a turn for the better. She's conscious, and her doctor thinks she might be able to talk to us a little bit.
Good. When?
About an hour. I cleared it with the doctor and with her family. You'll only be able to stay a couple of minutes to make the most of them. That's all.
All right, Ed. We'll check with you later.
Say, Joe, Ben, here's some mail came for you fellas while you were gone.
Oh, thank you, Mike. We're going over to the county hospital. We ought to be back in a couple hours.
Okay. Say, there's been a couple of phone calls, too.
Yeah, anything important?
I don't think so. The guy just called to say hello. Said his name was Johnny Savage. He just called to say hello.
I presume you men are aware of the girl's critical condition.
Yeah, that's right, Dr. Froman.
We saw her before she was taken here to the hospital.
Ah, yes. You understand, of course, that you'll be able to see her for only a few minutes, and please try your best not to excite her, huh?
Right, Doctor.
Sally isn't able to talk. Bad mouth and face injuries, so your questions will have to be answered simply yes or no and nod of the head.
Okay, we got you. We only have a few questions, and we want to know if she can identify the man who beat her from these pictures we've got here.
All right, Sergeant. This way, please.
Thank you.
Sally, these gentlemen are from the police department. They'd like to ask you a few questions. Now, there's no need to be nervous or afraid. Just simply nod your head yes or no. Now, that's fine. All right, Sergeant.
Sally, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes. She says yes.
Did you get a good look at his face? You did. All right, Sally, now you can answer these 3 together, just yes or no. Was he tall? Did he have dark hair? Did he have large hands? He did. Ben.
Yeah, Jim.
Hand me the folder.
Oh, yeah. Here you are.
Thanks. Now, there's just one more thing, Sally. I'm going to show you some pictures. Now, take all the time you want before you make up your mind about each one. If you recognize any one of these men as the person who attacked you, just nod your head. All right? Oh, that's fine. Now, good. Here's the first one. No? All right. Here's the next one. No. How about this one? No? All right. Here's another. Do you recognize him? This was the man? Are you sure, Sally? Thank you. That's all. Let's go.
Did you find what you wanted, Sergeant?
Yes, Doctor, we did. Here, it's this one.
Nice looking chap. Who is he, Sergeant?
His name's Savage, Dr. Froman. Johnny Savage. When we got back to the office, we checked in with Ed Backstrand. In 5 minutes, an all-points bulletin and a full description of the suspect was broadcast to every radio car, every motorcycle officer, to every sheriff and law enforcement agency in Los Angeles and Southern California. By nightfall, our manhunt was on. More than a dozen extra patrol units were called in for duty that night, and when they pulled out of the police garage, the name, the picture, and the full description of Johnny Savage was in the possession of every officer. The same for the patrolmen. Whether they walked a beat downtown or out in the residential areas, the picture of Johnny Savage went with them. Everything was done that could be done. On the second night of the manhunt, far out on the edge of town, Johnny Savage, the red light bandit, got his 12th victim, a 63-year-old storekeeper.
Attention, all units. 939 Markham Street, near Clark, 211 and Slugging, code 3, ambulance dispatched. All units, 939 Markham Street, near Clark.
Here it is, Skipper.
Time. What'd you get?
Wilkerson lifted the prints off that black sedan that rammed Joe and me.
Yeah?
They belonged to Johnny Savage.
Yeah, good.
That storekeeper last night. It is Savage, all right. Victim identified him from his mug.
All right. We got enough in this Savage guy to put him on ice for life. All we have to do now is to get him.
Now, look, the way we figure it, Ed, this red light bandit is using stolen cars with cold plates, so there's no way of tracking down the cars at regular commercial garages. He's got to be running private garages someplace around town.
All right, let's get the neighborhood patrolman on the job. Advertise it. All over town. It's a city ordinance, isn't it? People who rent private garages are bound by law to register the car and license number with the police. Start a campaign if you want, but find those cars.
Right.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hello, Backstrand. Yeah? When? I see. Yeah, thanks.
What is it, Ed?
It was the hospital. About the girl, Sally.
Sally Wilder? What about her?
She died 5 minutes ago.
That night, everybody went back on the job as usual. The cruiser cars, the patrolmen, the motorcycle officers, and about a dozen decoy cars. Armed policewomen riding alone in cars or parked in lonely spots with a police officer escort. Our car, 80K, was still in the garage for repairs, so they assigned us another one. And we started to make the rounds. Everything was usual. Except one thing. We weren't tracking down just a thief anymore or a sadist who liked to put people's faces in. We were out to get a murderer. It was a perfect night for the suspect. Dark, no moon. I gave Ben 2-1 odds, and I put up $5 that we'd get Savage that night. I lost the $5. We cruised until 7 the next morning, but there wasn't even a nibble. We had breakfast at the Federal Cafe, a little restaurant down the street from the City Hall, and it was about 8:15 when we got back to the office. We were pretty tired.
Robert Detail, Romero.
I would like to speak to Sergeant Friday.
Just a minute. For you, Joe.
Okay, thanks. Friday talking.
Sergeant Friday, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm listening. Go ahead.
I mean, I want to talk to you in person as soon as possible.
Can't you tell me over the phone? What is it?
I cannot tell you over the phone. It is very important. Can you come now?
Well, now, look, mister, I'm awful sorry, but we're very busy down...
554 Ramona Avenue. Can you come now?
Well, what's this all about? Who is this speaking?
My name is Carl Savage. My son's name is John.
Here it is, Joe. Neat looking little place.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm Sergeant Friday. You Mr. Savage?
Yeah, come in.
Okay. This is my partner, Sergeant Romero.
How do you do? I will be brief, gentlemen. I am the father of John Savage. I wish for you to catch him. I will help you.
I noticed the name on the mailbox outside, Mr. Savage. Changed your name lately?
I changed my name 10 years ago when John first got into trouble. My own name I had to change, the shame. Always from him, my son, shame.
Mr. Savage, has your son been home since he got out of prison?
Yeah, many times, to ask for money. I would not give him any, so he struck me. Last night I read in the newspaper the little girl he beat up. She is dead. Then I make up my mind.
Do you know where your son is now, Mr. Savage?
Not now, no. But our garage has a car in there. It is not his, I know. Also in the garage, I find many license plates. I find spotlights with red glass lens.
But you don't have any idea where we could find
him. No, but he will come back. He always comes back for money.
We're going to station an officer here in the house, Mr. Savage.
Anything you want, if it will catch him. He's bad, Sergeant. Like something poison or all true, he's bad.
See a sewing basket over him, Mr. Savage. Your wife live here with you?
10 days ago, before this starts, I bury Gertrude, my wife, his mother. Sergeant, for 10 years she is sick, but for 10 years she stays alive to see him from prison. 10 days ago, she died. He did not even come to the funeral.
Did your son have any idea that you might call us?
No. No, I don't think so. But when you catch him, give me a gun. With my own two hands, I will kill him, Johnny Savage.
Before we left, we called Ed Backstrand and we brought him up to date. He sent three detectives out to relieve us, Davis, Griffin, and Marsh. We told them to keep an eye on the house and the stolen car in the garage. That night after dinner, Ed Backstrand, Ben, and I went out and relieved them. We parked the cruiser car in the garage next door, and then we took up our posts. Carl Savage had a light supper, and then he went to bed about 9. The three of us sat at the front windows in the darkened house, and we waited. Ben kept his eye on the garage. Outside, across the city, the manhunt continued as usual. 3 hours went by. The waiting got monotonous.
Brandy, Romero, look alive, will you?
Oh, yes, Skipper, I'm sorry.
That clock's enough to put anybody to sleep.
Yeah, what time you got?
12:23 a.m.
Thanks.
The clock kept ticking. We were tired. We took turns keeping each other awake. At 2:10, I looked at my watch, and then I settled back and tried to find some kind of a comfortable position. They started so faintly, it was just like the ticking of the clock. Same rhythm. And then they came closer, and the sounds got out of rhythm. Backstrand's head came up with a snap.
Ready. Romero. You hear that?
Yeah, Ed.
Get up to the window once the curtains. You see anything?
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's coming.
Savage?
Can't tell. Wait a minute, he's slowing down. He's going up the driveway to the garage. He's going inside. That's him.
Come on. Watch it, he spotted us. He went over that fence into the yard.
There he is, Friday.
You hit him, Joe.
Maybe.
He's going for the street.
He's headed for that car, Ed, that sedan up on the corner there.
Yeah, Romero, go back and get the car.
Right, Skipper.
Must have parked up the block before he came around. Where's Romero?
I don't know. Oh, here he comes now. All right, let's go.
Get that radio on, Joe.
It's already on, Ed.
All right, give him a call. Any sign yet?
No, nothing so far. Next corner to the right, Ben. Unit 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4.
Control 4 to Unit 80K. Go ahead.
Clear and keep Frequency 4 open. This is an emergency.
80K, roger. Frequency 4, open and clear. Attention, all units on Frequency 4. Stand by. 80K, go ahead.
Yeah, there he is, Friday, up ahead. Dark blue sedan.
Control 4, we are in pursuit of a possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 61 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3.
Attention, all units. Attention, all units. Unit 80K now pursuing possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 61 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3. Your location, 80K.
Control 4. We are headed east on Wilshire Boulevard, crossing La Brea.
Attention, all units.
Watch it, Romero. Don't lose him.
I see him, Skipper.
Control 4, still pursuing red light bandit. Headed east on Wilshire, now crossing Rossmore.
Attention, all units. Suspect is still headed east on Wilshire, now crossing Rossmore. Suspect is armed. Use caution. Code 3.
That truck pulling out up ahead.
Hit the siren, will you, Skipper?
Yeah.
Right, hold on to tight squeeze.
Keeping on, Romero. A lot of traffic up ahead. He's got to slow down.
Control 4. Suspect headed east on Wilshire, crossing Western Avenue, closing in.
There he goes. Took a right down Sherman Alley. The dead end.
Yeah. Control 4. Suspect turns south into Sherman Alley, closing in on suspect.
Attention, all units. Suspect has turned south into Sherman Alley. Suspect is
trapped.
Converge on Sherman Alley.
There he is, Skipper. Pulling up ahead. He's jumping out.
All right, take the mic, will you, Ed? Here. Come on, Ben.
I'll direct the other cars in. If you need help, holler.
All right, Skipper.
All right, which way to go, Ben?
Down between those buildings.
Come on.
We're starting up the back fire escape.
All right, keep him busy. All right, Savage, come on down.
He wants to go the rough way.
One more chance, Savage. Come on down.
No use, Joe. He's heading up for the roof.
Come on. He climbs like a monkey. Come on, let's get him.
Yeah, all right.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Here's the roof. All right, where'd he go?
I don't know. Let's spread out. All right, Savage, you're through.
Throw your gun out and come out with your hands up.
Watch it, Joe. He's running for the edge.
He's going to jump.
I'll get him. All right, up. Guy back here.
You lousy copper. You dirty, lousy copper. I'll kill you out.
You're through, Savage. You're through.
Good, Joe. Yeah.
Throw the cuffs on, will you?
Yeah, you just betcha. Yeah. You want a smoke?
Yeah, I can sure use one. Thanks.
Quiet up here.
Yeah. I was just thinking.
Well?
Carl Savage, this guy's father.
Mm-hmm. What about him?
Nothing. What would you do, Ben, if your son was a murderer?
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
John Savage was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard the sixth in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Patrol Officer Robert Steele of the Montana State Highway Patrol, who on the morning of November 2nd, 1947, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You've been off duty 2 hours. You receive an emergency call from the chief of detectives. An entire block in the heart of your city is threatened with complete destruction. Your job, report at once.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, November 15th. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were off duty reporting in on an emergency call. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 8:32 a.m. when I walked in the Spring Street entrance of the City Hall.
You, Sergeant Friday?
Yeah, that's right.
Take my elevator, Sergeant. It's the only one in service.
All right.
I'll run you up to 16. The chief's waiting for you up there.
What's the pitch? Only one elevator in service out of 10? The place looks deserted. What's going on?
Nobody in the building. All the office people have been sent home. Lots of trouble.
Somebody declare a holiday?
No joke, Sergeant. Big trouble.
All right, you convinced me. What is it?
Here we are. 16th floor.
Over here, Freddy.
Hi, Joe.
Hello, Ben.
You made good time.
Came as soon as I got the call.
Sorry to have to bring you back in. You worked last night, didn't you?
Yeah, midnight to 8 this morning.
Sorry. Come on.
Okay.
What is it, Skipper? Why all the hush?
Wait till we get inside. In here.
Okay.
Number one, let's keep our voices down.
All right.
I'll make it as brief as I can. Every minute counts. What time you got, Friday?
8:33.
All right, here it is. 55 minutes ago, a man walked into this building with a homemade bomb under his arm. If we don't release his brother from the county jail by 9 o'clock this morning, he says he'll pull the trigger on the bomb and blow up the whole building.
He's kidding, Skipper. Who is the guy?
Name's Vernon Carney. Here's his package. He and his brother have been in and out of jail since 1937. Small-time thieves.
Yeah. Where's the FBI kickback? We had him once before, both of them.
Brother's name is Elwood, serving a year for car stripping.
And this two-bit thief is sitting here in a city hall with a bomb on his lap?
That's right. In the next room.
What kind of a bomb is it, Ed? You think he's bluffing?
Could be bluffing, but the crime lab says no.
Lee Jones from the lab get a look at it?
Been in there twice. One end of the box is glass. Says you can't see much without a closer look, but you can't get near the guy.
What do you want us to do?
It's a volunteer job. You can take it or leave it. I won't order you to do it.
How you want to handle it?
You sure you want a piece of this one, Romero?
No, he doesn't, Ed. He's got a family. Get me another single man. We'll give it a try.
Wait a minute, Joe. What makes this job so different? Anytime we kick a door in, we never know what's on the other side.
That's what makes it different. This time we do.
No, you're not going to cut me out. Not the only time I know what I'm getting into.
All right. Chandler's tried. Hannon, Davis, Watson, they've all tried. This guy Carney knows what he's doing. He's no pushover. But somebody's got to get that bomb away from him. Friday, Romero, it's your baby now.
I looked at my watch. It was 8:36. We left Backstrand and started down the hall. If Carney was going to make good his threat to blow up the building by 9 o'clock, we had exactly 24 minutes to talk him out of it. Ben and I figured we'd better look him over first and then work out some kind of a plan. Maybe just talking to him would do it. Vernon Carney was sitting in a straight-backed chair against the far wall facing the door. He was seated between two windows that looked out over the city. Along the left wall was a row of six wooden chairs. In the center of the right wall was a connecting door leading to the office where Backstrand had briefed us. The door was locked on both sides. Just off-center and favoring the left of the room was a small filing table. The other furniture in the office was a desk just forward of the connecting door on the right. There was a dictaphone on the desk. In the near left corner, shielded by a white screen, was a small wash basin. The faucet leaked. Vernon Carney was middle-aged. He sat erect, holding a black box on his lap. He held his right hand inside one end of the box. Ben and I stood there for a minute and looked at him. Then we walked in the room. What do you say to a man with a bomb?
That's close enough.
Cigarette, Carney?
I'm not smoking right now.
What are you trying to prove?
You know what I want.
We're not going to let your brother out of jail.
You got until 9 o'clock to change your mind. According to that clock on the wall, you got 24 minutes.
If we go, you're going with us, Carney.
Don't take much of a brain to figure that, copper.
What made you think you could get away at this?
Haven't yet. It ain't 9 o'clock. Unless that clock's slow. Haven't checked it against my pocket watch lately. That's the one that's running this show.
Have you given any thought to all the innocent people that are going to go up with that thing of yours there?
My brother's innocent. I want him out of jail.
The court says he's guilty. He'll get out when he serves his time.
That's where you're wrong, copper. He gets out at 9 o'clock this morning.
All right, come on, Carney. Get your hand out of that box. Put the box on the table.
You think I'm bluffing, don't you? I'm going to let you get within 5 feet before I make a liar out of you.
Okay, Carney. I guess you mean business.
You can take 3 more steps and find out for sure.
Suppose we did let your brother out. We'd just come out and pick him up again, you along with him.
If you could find us.
Let's get this straight. If we let your brother Elwood out, how do we know you're going to keep your promise?
What promise? I ain't made any promises. You just get Elwood down here first, and then we'll talk about it.
There's only one thing I can't figure, Carney.
Yeah, what's that?
If we don't let your brother out, you say you'll pull the trigger on that bomb. You're going to kill a lot of innocent people. What are you going to prove by that?
It's 8:37. You've got 23 minutes left.
Now, I wish you'd answer that one for me. Why do you want to kill a lot of innocent people?
Don't try to con me, copper. I know they cleared everybody out of this building 45 minutes ago. I know they cleaned out the whole block. They got it roped off.
Where'd you get your information?
I got a couple of windows here to look out of. Don't you think it's about time to send somebody over to get Elwood?
You know, Carney, we've got a way out of this. We don't have to let your brother out neither.
I've heard that before.
What's to stop us from leaving the building along with the other few officers and let you sit here and touch off that bomb?
Go ahead. It won't be a long wait without you. Who are you trying to kid? You'd let me blow up $10 million worth of taxpayers' money? Ah, no. You're going to let Elwood out. You'll wait till the last minute to do it. But you'll let him out.
Ed, I'm still not convinced Kearney can back up what he says.
Then why didn't you take the box away from him?
Yeah.
We're in a spot, let's face it.
How about an eye for an eye, Skipper?
What do you mean?
If he pulls the trigger on that machine, he kills us. How about us getting him first?
All right, Romero. How are you going to handle it?
Well, I'm not the top man on the pistol range, but I could wing him.
And then he hands the box to you? Or maybe he falls and his reflex action pulls the trigger.
Okay, I don't wing him. I stop him for keeps.
You just can't walk in there and shoot him down.
Why not? You do the same thing with armed criminals.
Yeah, but you warn him first.
I'll warn him.
Yeah, and after you shoot him, you find out it's a harmless gadget. Couldn't have gone off in a million years.
No, no, a gun's not the answer. We can't shoot him until we're positive.
We'll be positive by 9 o'clock, and there might not be anybody around to shoot him.
We've located Kearney's apartment. There's a detail out there checking it now. Pacelli and Morris.
Ed, have you got any ideas at all? Anything we could try?
That's why I called you in. None of us have gotten any further than you did just now.
There's just one thing I want to know for sure.
Yeah, Friday. Is it or isn't it? We all want to know.
Either way, we've got to get that box away from him.
Backstrand. Yeah. You did? Yeah. No, stay out there till I call you. All right, here's half the answer. That was Pacelli. They found 28 sticks of dynamite in Kearney's apartment.
We knew Kearney wasn't kidding now. We could see into the bomb through that glass window and went in. It looked like dynamite inside, and there was dynamite in Kearney's room. We didn't know if he had the nerve to pull the trigger. We didn't know if it would go off when he did. But with only minutes remaining, nobody wanted to take the chance. From here on in, all of us agreed that Vernon Kearney sat in the next room, holding in his two hands a force powerful enough to destroy us all. We had to get that box away from him, and to get that box, we had to have a plan. I looked at my watch. It was 8:40. 20 minutes till 9 o'clock.
How do we get it away from him?
I got an idea. It might work.
Let's have it.
Kearney's sitting against the far wall between two windows. They're both open.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, if we could get a man through one of those windows, we might get Kearney from behind.
How are you going to get him?
Whoever gets through the window could slug him.
What do you do then?
Somebody grabs the box. The crime lab can tell us what to do with it.
How do we get a man through one of those windows? We're on the 16th floor.
Well, there's some kind of a ledge that runs around the building on each story.
Wide enough for a man to walk on?
And let's take a look.
All right.
Looks pretty narrow, Joe.
That's a good 18 inches. Could be done.
Not too risky. It's raining out. That ledge is slippery.
Strong wind out there, Joe. Tear a man right off the building.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, there's still a way. How about a ladder?
16 floors, Skipper.
There might be a way. The fire department would know that. I'll get Battalion Chief Erickson.
Is Lee Jones in the building?
No, he's over in the crime lab. I'll get him up here, too. I don't know, Friday. Maybe it'll work.
It's got to, Ed.
All right, now look. It's going to take a couple of minutes to set this up. We've got to know what Kearney's doing every second of that time.
Well, how about the dictaphone in there on the desk?
Good. Get it on without him seeing you.
We'll try.
The dictaphone in there is connected to this one in here. This room is 1614. You got that?
Yeah.
All right, push down key 1614 on that machine in there and leave it down. Get the receiver off the hook and leave it off.
Leave the receiver off.
That's right. You know, if it isn't off the hook, we won't be able to hear a thing in here.
All right. Come on, Ben.
This is Backstrand. Give me Chief Erickson.
Where's my brother?
Still in his cell.
You coppers are long on talk, but short on time.
Yeah, we know.
I'm telling you, for your own good, you'd better get Elwood over here.
Kearney, I'll bet if we get your brother on the phone here, he'll tell you he doesn't want any part of this.
You mean Elwood don't want out? Since when?
Sure he wants out, but not your way.
He's only got a year to serve. Why don't you leave him alone?
I told El. I told him I'd get him out. He didn't think I could do it. But I'm doing it.
I'll make you a bet, Kearney. Let us get your brother on the phone. He won't walk out of here with you.
Get him on the pipe. Where you going? The phone's over here.
Have to use the dictaphone. We get an okay from the chief. Elwood's still a prisoner.
What's the matter with the phone?
No operators. You know the building's been cleared.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Almost forgot. Okay, you can use the dictaphone.
This Friday, Ed. Kearney wants to talk to his brother. Yeah, I know you'll have to send somebody over. Have them put the call on extension... Wait a minute. What's that extension number, Ben?
2351.
2351, Ed. Right. It'll take a minute.
Yeah. I'd kind of like to talk to El. Been a couple of months since I seen him. We've always been together, me and El, most of the time.
Joe, let's go in and see if we can hurry that call.
Good idea, boy. 16 minutes to 9. Hey, cop.
Yeah.
Forgot to hang up the dictaphone, didn't you?
I put the receiver back on the dictaphone. Ben and I had failed to make good on the first step of the plan. When we got outside the door, we briefed Davis and Watson. They went in to sit with Carney. It would be their job to keep us posted on Carney's movements. The dictaphone was out. We went back into the office next door. Chief Sam Erickson of the fire department and Lieutenant Lee Jones from the crime lab were already there. We told Backstrand what happened.
It would have been a help. We haven't got time to cry over it.
Carney's wide awake, Skipper. He doesn't miss a thing.
Backstrand told us the plan Friday. We can't run a ladder up from the street.
Too high, Chief?
Best we got is a 100-foot aerial. You figure 12 foot to the story, that'll take you up 96 feet, 8 floors. And we've got the latest equipment.
What's the idea you had, Jones?
Sam, can you get hold of a pump here in a hurry?
Sure, we got a lot of scaling ladders, but you got nothing up there to hook them on.
You figured on dropping down from the floor above?
That's right, and I figure a pump here would do it.
Sure it would. You could make it fast to the windowsill up there, but you got a foot and a half ledge in the way. No, what you want is a lifeline.
You mean lower a man on a rope, Chief?
Yeah, Romero. That's the quickest and the quietest.
Could you rig it so one of my boys could do it?
Sure, Ed.
What's the risk?
None, if you work it right. We'll strap on a life belt, give the man heavy leather gloves. Two of my men will lower him down. Pick your lightest man.
What do you think, Lee?
That's it.
What do we do with the bomb when we get it?
I figure that box Connie's holding is about a foot square. Here's what I'll do. I'll get you a bucket with a foot and a half mouth. It'll be full of water.
Yeah?
I'll have it right outside the door of that office. When you get that box, place it in the water. We'll get the bucket out of the building as fast as we can.
And once we get the bomb underwater, we're in the clear.
And I can't promise you that, but it's the safest way to handle it under the circumstances.
All right, that's the procedure. Sam, you take care of your end.
Right away.
I'll get a detail to give me a hand down in the street. We'll have a car ready to take the bomb to a safe area to decommission it.
Work as fast as you can.
Come on, Sam.
It's our baby, Joe.
That's right.
Which part of it you want, the rope or the bomb?
You call it.
Fire Chief Erickson says the lightest man on the rope.
That's me, Joe. All right, I'll get the bomb out of the building.
Okay, that's the routine. But carry this with you. The man that comes down on that rope has one chance to make good. You slug him and make it count because there's no second try.
Yeah.
And, Joe, when you grab that box, you got to get it away from Carney before he can squeeze the trigger. Then you got to get it down into the street.
The elevator.
You know how to operate it?
That's pretty simple, but I'll double check with the operator.
Better do it right now.
Okay. Ed, we better get Carney's brother on the phone for him. He seemed anxious.
Might be a pretty good stall.
All right, Romero. That's the outside phone. Get the city jail.
All right, Skipper.
Get going, Friday.
Okay. Hey, you. Elevator man.
Sergeant.
Let me see if I know how to work that thing.
You taking over the elevator?
Well, in a couple of minutes. You want to check me out?
Nothing to it, Sergeant.
All right.
Now, here's the control, see? Uh-huh. You push this lever right to go up, left to go down. You see this little trigger on the underside of the handle?
Yeah.
That's the safety lock. Be sure you squeeze it or you can't move the lever.
Let me try it, huh?
That's it. Uh-huh. Right to go up, uh-huh. Left to go down.
Right to go up, left to go down. How do you operate the doors?
Automatic. They work off the control lever. When the control lever is locked in the up or down position, the doors will close.
I get it.
Now, in case they jam, this red emergency button up here...
Yeah.
Push it. If that doesn't close them, we call the repairman.
Okay, I think I got it.
You sure now? I've had my orders to get out of the building. I'll just leave the elevator right here and take the stairs down.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sergeant, just curious. You going to take the bomb down in this car?
We're going to try.
You won't have any trouble. We haven't had an elevator failure in 18 months.
The elevator man turned and went down the stairs. Outside of a handful of volunteers and a man with a bomb... The city hall was now cleared. I started down the corridor and met Ben outside the office. He told me that Lee Jones and Chief Erickson were on their way up in the freight elevator at the rear of the building with the necessary equipment. The two fire department volunteers were with him. The phone call had been put through to the city jail, and in a moment, Elwood Carney would be ready at the other end of the line. We went in to tell Carney.
I told him over at the jail to put the call through on extension 2351.
Yeah. When's it coming through?
Right now.
Mm-hmm. You got Elwood with you?
No.
Look, Carney, we told you we'd get him on the phone for you. The call will be through in a minute.
Minute's a long time, cop. You only got 12 of them left.
Elwood's going to talk you out of this.
Oh, sure. Sure everybody's going to talk me out of this. First it was them other two cops, the little porky guy and that other monkey. Then you and this Dixie Doughhead here, and now it's Elwood. Come off it, will you, and get my brother over here.
That's him.
It's your brother, Connie. I'll get him.
They put you.
Just going to get the phone. You want to talk to your brother, don't you?
I'll take care of the phone. We'll disconnect it for a while.
Now get it straight, copper. I'm through with your stinking rotten lying. I want Elwood here. And I want him now. Bring him here before I blow you all to pieces.
What's going on? Who threw that phone out in the hall?
I did. You want me to go out and pick it up?
Connie, that's not going to get you anyplace.
You the big boss around here?
Maybe.
Are you or aren't you?
I answered you.
All right, big boy. I've got a piece of advice for you. Take your rookie cops here and get it through their heads. I mean what I say. I want my brother over here in this room. And you've got just 11 minutes to get it done. Tell them that, will you, boy?
All right, Connie. It's your show. All right, we got to work fast now. Jones, everything set for you?
Got the bucket with the water right here. Car's waiting down in the street.
Right. Erickson, your boy's ready?
Upstairs, waiting.
And we all know what to do.
Ed, I got to have somebody to give me a hand with Carney when he falls.
I'll be in there with you, Friday.
Ready to go upstairs, Chief?
Anytime. Oh, one thing you ought to know.
What's that?
Strong wind coming up. About 20 miles an hour out there right now.
That going to louse us up?
No, but it's going to increase the sway. Got to allow for it.
How you mean?
Wind's coming from the south. We'll lower you just to the right of the window. If I figure it correctly, wind will do the rest. Bigger risk, but we don't control the weather.
How you going to do it, Ben?
As soon as I get in position, I'll reach in through the window on his right. I'll use the belly. Try to catch him on the right side of his head. One good hit should put him away.
Let's make it two and be sure, huh?
Right. You ready, Chief?
Now let's go.
Ben.
Yeah?
Nothing.
I'll be careful. You too, huh?
What's the time, Friday?
8:50.
Shouldn't take more than a couple of minutes for Romero to get down to that window, lest the wind gives him trouble.
Jones, no use you sticking around.
I'll give Friday a hand.
That's my job. We've got to keep you alive to decommission the bomb.
Bum joke. See you downstairs.
You ready, Ed?
Yeah. Scared, Friday?
Yeah.
That makes us even. Come on.
Ed Backstrand and I went into the next room with Vernon Carney. Our job was to keep him occupied until Ben was lowered to the windowsill from the floor above. Ben was going to make a try from the window on Carney's right. Somehow, we had to keep Carney's attention on us and away from that window. If anything went wrong and Carney got out of position, the plan would fail. If Ben was spotted, the plan would fail. If Chief Erickson didn't estimate the force of the wind correctly, the plan would fail. After Ben slugged Carney, my timing had to be perfect. If it wasn't, the plan would fail. I looked at my watch. It was 8 minutes to nine.
Carney, anything we can say that'll make you change your mind?
I've asked you 100 times. Now I'm ordering you. You're going to get to a phone and have somebody send Elwood over here right now. I'm through waiting. Now move.
You ripped out the phone, Carney.
Well, find another one. I told you I'm sick of your two-bit stalling.
We've got until 9 o'clock to make up our mind about this.
You had until nine. But you wouldn't do what I told you. Now I'm cutting you short. You guys have got exactly 1 minute to get a phone in this room where I can hear you call the jail and have them send Elwood over here.
You said nine, Carney.
All right, Joe. We'll give him what he wants.
Davis, unlock the connecting door to this office.
I'll get the phone, Ed.
Will the cord reach?
Yeah.
Your brother's a prisoner. He's in our custody and he's under our protection. We can't place his life in jeopardy.
Why not leave it up to Al?
Here's the phone, Ed.
Yeah. Kenworthy, this is Backstrand. We want Elwood Carney over here at City Hall. His brother wants to see him. Explain the situation. If he wants to come, get him over here. Leave it up to him. Room 1614. You'll have to use the freight elevator.
And tell him to hurry.
Yeah. Tell him to hurry.
That's the only smart thing you've done today. Now, why don't you go next door and figure out another angle?
We'll wait for Elwood, too.
You don't think I'd let you get out now, do you? We're all going to wait right here for my brother. In case he don't show up, you're going to see me pull the plug. Just sit down. Not so close. Right where you are, sit down. Loud clock, ain't it? Windy. Getting cold in here. Shh. Sure a loud clock. Real windy. Maybe I ought to close the windows. Don't want to catch me a cold.
I can turn on the heat.
Stay put, cop. Hey, what's that? What's going on?
Just the wind.
Shut up! There's somebody out there. I can see his feet. You stupid cops. Pull him up! Get back there, you! Pull him up!
Friday, tell him to pull him up.
Right.
Pull him up!
All right, Carney. You win.
You bet I win, you dumb coppers. You didn't think I'd miss a trick like that. We'll just close these windows, boys. There's one, and lock it. And here's...
Here's your brother, Carney.
Yeah. Hi, Al.
Hi, Vern. You did it.
I told you. I told you I'd do it, didn't I? That's far enough for the rest of you. Al, come on over here.
You're crazy, Vern. You're crazy.
Yeah, that's what they've been trying to tell me. We're going home, Al.
How are you going to do it? There's a million cops outside. People all over town heard about this. They're holding the crowd back.
They ain't going to stop us now, Al.
You'll never make it, either one of you.
I got him this far, didn't I? We'll make it.
Vern, you think we could do it?
Hey, you.
Yeah?
You're going to get a car ready for us, a fast one. Have it in front of the building. Move!
All right, Fatty, do what he tells you.
Right.
Hold it.
Yeah.
If you ain't back by 9 o'clock, the deal still holds. I told him I'd pull the pin at 9, Al, if they didn't let you out.
You ain't fooling, are you, Vern? Will that gadget really blow?
4 miles high. You know what that means, Al?
Yeah. But they won't let you pull it. We're getting out.
All right, copper. Get the car. You got 4 minutes.
He spot me?
Yeah, there's no time to explain that. Listen, we got to work fast.
Yeah.
We had to bring Carney's brother over from the jail. I don't think he cares if they get out or not. He just wants to use that bomb, and for some crazy reason, he's waiting until 9.
How much time we got?
Let me look. Less than 4 minutes.
How about the ledge?
You think you can do it? Strong wind. You'll have to hang on like a fly.
I don't know. I can give it a try.
Okay. Same plan. Every second counts. Now, I can't brief Ed. He's in the room with the guy. It's up to you and me.
I'll get on a ledge from one of these offices. I hope I make it.
If you don't, we'll know you tried. Hurry.
Hey, Ben, wait a minute. Yeah?
I forgot. The windows. The one on his right. He locked it. You'll have to crawl around to the one on the left. You got it?
Right.
Okay.
The car will be ready in 2 minutes. Out front.
Fine. Al and I'll just sit here and wait. Gonna be good being back together, huh, Al?
We always were real good together, Vern.
Yeah, that's the way brothers ought to be together, all the time. Together.
Vern, I'd feel better with a gun.
We don't need no gun, Al. We got the bomb.
We'll need a gun when we get out, when we get on the road.
Okay. Take your pick. They all got them. Hey, you, give him yours.
I'm not carrying a gun. I left it in the other room.
A cop without a gun? Who's kidding who?
I left it in the other room.
Frisk the big boy, Al. He's got one. About time for the car, ain't it? 9:02.
Yeah, this feels like it. Right on his hip. Hey, Vern, look out!
Grab him, Joe, I got him.
Yeah. Get the box!
Leave that gun alone.
I got him, Ben. I gotta get his hand out of it.
Run, Joe, get it in the water. Run!
I've never shared an elevator with a live bomb. It seemed like minutes between floors. I kept watching the bucket. The bomb was completely underwater. A small stream of bubbles was hissing to the surface. I waited. Main floor. I picked up the bucket and ran for the street. I missed the first step. I fell forward. The bucket spun out of my hand. I sprawled flat on the sidewalk. I waited for the explosion.
It didn't go off Friday.
Yeah.
gave it a good chance, Lee.
It was all there. Look, at least a dozen sticks of dynamite. Snyder, bring that over here.
Here you are, Lieutenant.
Thanks. Here's why it didn't go off. Mm-hmm. Had it rigged for a hard trigger pull. Would have taken a good yank to set this one off.
Yeah. Hi, Joe. Hi, Ben.
Clumsy.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. Vernon Carney was examined by five different psychiatrists appointed by the Superior Court and was found to be incompetent. He is now confined in the state mental institution for the criminally insane. Elwood Carney is now serving the balance of his sentence with no time off for good behavior. You have just heard the seventh in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department. Tonight's program is dedicated to Town Marshal Lon T. Larson of the Mount Pleasant, Utah Force, who on the night of October 15, 1945, gave his life so that yours might be more secure. Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Thanks for joining us at Radio Days Old Time Radio Hour. Our Radio Days Old Time Radio Hour launches two new episodes every week on Wednesday and Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure to join us at www.1001radiodays.com and leave a review at iTunes for us. Thanks. We'll be back real soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.